broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. It's Sam Bushman and Kirk Crosby live on your radio. Hard-hitting news that networks refuse to use. No doubt starts now. This is the broadcast for June 17th in the year of our Lord, 2019. This is hour one of two. And our goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country on your radio and the traditions of our founding fathers. Yes, indeed, we use the blueprint for liberty, the supreme law of the land, the Constitution for the United States of America as our guide. And absolutely, we're convinced that checks and balances brilliantly put in place by the founding fathers, one of the great peaceful restorative solutions we have at our fingertips. Welcome to the broadcast. You know we reject revolution. You know we stand for peaceful restoration of the greatest country on the face of the earth. And you also know that we believe the media, the new media taking center stage, we the people, truth in media, if you will, we believe we're one of the great, great equalizers. When the people get the correct information, they make wise choices. We were live last Saturday because this broadcast is 2 hours a day, 6 days a week. And we talked about first hour news that the networks refused to use, Liberty Roundtable Live Week in Review. Wow, what a week of news, I'll tell you that right now. Second hour, we had our buddy on, Richard Mack. We talked a lot about the Freedom Coalition. We talked about the CSPOA.org. We talked about Monday, June 17th. That is today, ladies and gentlemen, is a National Press Club event. It's from 12:30 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. So that means 10:30 our time to 3. And it's Truth in Taxation exposes constitutional crimes, ladies and gentlemen. This is a serious, serious discussion. And we appreciate those folks letting us know about that. We shall get a report on that hopefully tomorrow or the next day. Soon, that's for sure, because we want to really highlight kind of what's going on with all that stuff. So there you have it. Today, Truth in Taxation exposes constitutional crimes. It is today. That's Monday, June 17th, the National Press Club today. We'll have an update on that as the broadcast unfolds in future broadcasts, but we wanted to highlight that. I also promoted a You Lead, We Will Follow campaign. It's a campaign to consider about the American people getting to their sheriffs and saying clearly to your sheriff, face-to-face, in person, not at a rally where they can shut you down, not, you know, just an email or a, but I'm talking about sit down face-to-face, make an appointment with your county sheriff. There's about 3,000 of them in America, so we only need about 3,000 citizens to do this. And sit down and say, hey, sheriff, I am a citizen in your county. I am a constituent, if you will. I helped get you elected. And you know what? I really want to know, are you a constitutional sheriff? And we need to document their answers. And then what we need to do is just simply help our sheriffs become constitutional sheriffs. Help them understand their oaths of office. Help them realize the people are behind them when they do right by the Constitution, the checks and balances, right by their oath of office, etc., etc. We talked about that with a good sheriff. Secondly, we talked about Kim Kardashian. Kim Kardashian West returns to the White House for a, quote, prisoner reentry event is what it's called. And she then thanked President Donald J. Trump for his compassion and his dedication to criminal justice reform during the past year. And my response is, I agree with Kim and I agree with Donald. Good work, but we need more of it. They called it a first step for a reason. We talked about my journey from incarceration to freedom. Alice Marie Johnson wrote the book. She was freed by Kim and Donald, and, well, we need others to be freed as well. Steve Stockman, Sam Gerard, just to name a couple of them. That's a recap of Saturday's broadcast. News the networks refuse to use today starts now. Lowell Nelson, campaignforliberty.org with us. Welcome back to Liberty Roundtable Live, sir.
Well, thank you for having me, gentlemen. It's good to be with you.
It's been a couple of weeks since we had you. We know you were out of town taking care of family business, which we're grateful for. Did you know today, though, is a National Press Club event called Truth in Taxation?
Well, I only heard about it from an email from Ken last night, yes.
So that's good news. They're working on that, and we intend to highlight and do all we can to help with that effort. And truth in taxation exposes constitutional crimes. I agree with that. All right. All Americans have blood on their hands. This is a very serious topic. It is about war. And it starts out with a man named Dan who did go, what, to the Middle East? And he was shocked when he got there, Lowell.
Well, he spent 18 years in the military. We're talking about here about a young man whose name is last name is Jurison, I believe, Danny Jurison. Went to West Point, did several tours in the Middle East, including Iraq and Afghanistan, spending 18 years, Sam, on active duty and rising to the rank of major before he left the Army. Well, he did an interview with Robert Shear, editor-in-chief at TruthDig.com, who asked him about his military career and particularly about his recent book entitled Ghost Riders of Baghdad, Soldiers, Civilians, and the Myth of the Surge. Wow. Well, with that title, you can imagine that he is not pro-war anymore. He probably went over there when, you know, like most young men do, they think they're doing the right thing. Most of our military go over, you know, and they think they're involved in something noble. And of course, he came back with a very different idea, you know, 18 years later. He wrote a book. He actually wrote a letter to the Senate, one of the senators, who's one of the war hawks, and then that turned into a book, Ghost Riders of Baghdad. Very interesting, Sam. Several interviews, several bombshells from that interview that I just wanted to mention this morning. Shear says that Jurison is still profoundly troubled by his experiences at war, not only as he led soldiers to their deaths, but also as he watched the U.S. forces devastate Iraq and Afghanistan. And although he went to Iraq thinking the trouble with the war was the way it was being fought, he left with a very different impression of the conflict. He says, quote, "What I saw happen to the Iraqi people haunted me more than what happened to my soldiers. Not only the bodies in the streets, but not only the civil war that was being waged, but I found that more than 90% of the very friendly Iraqis, both Sunni and Shia, they all told me that life was better under Saddam. That was a big turning point when I started to say, wait a second, you know, forget about fighting the war poorly. We shouldn't be fighting this war at all."
And let's be very clear. We're not defending Assam. We're not defending some of the wrongs that may be committed and part of their excuse for getting people out. What we're suggesting is that we oftentimes pretend we make it better. Oftentimes we make it worse. At best, oftentimes we go sideways. We don't really improve situations is the point. The best way to improve the situation would be give them a copy of the Constitution, let them learn, and let them internally, as peacefully as they can, Declaration of Independence-esque if they must, evolve as a society and change and grow and embrace principles of success, primarily turning to God. And that doesn't happen through violence and war and bloodshed. Folks, that's the bottom line. And the sooner we understand this, the better off we are. But we're not defending Saddam Hussein or defending the way it used to be as much as we're suggesting that we're not making things any better. Lol.
That's what Jurison said. Yeah, he recounted the many ways the U.S. had created worse conditions for Iraqis, you know, in this interview. We made it worse for them after taking out Saddam. He said, quote, "Nearly 500,000 Iraqis who have died since the early 2000s were not killed directly by American soldiers, but by the unleashing of what he calls a Pandora's box of sectarian civil war in what was once a very secular society. The war in Afghanistan, while fought under different pretenses, was no less brutal or foolish than the Iraq war." And he goes on to say, "The reality is any chance of victory in Afghanistan was over the minute," and he says this only took away weeks, he says, "the minute after we switched from a counter-terrorism strategy, the surgical law enforcement type attack on the Al-Qaeda system, the minute we switched from that to nation-building, counterinsurgency and occupation, the war was already lost." Sam, I think that's a pretty serious indictment of our strategy there in the Middle East, because
you lose the moral high ground if you ever had it in the first place.
Yeah, right. Yeah, He says he observed that nearly all of the Americans who died and an equal number of Afghans, who we often forget about, they died after that moment when the war was no longer winnable. Right. So he says it only takes a few weeks. It only took a few weeks to change from the counterinsurgency approach to an occupation approach, to a nation-building approach. And when, in that moment, at that moment, after that moment, he says everybody who died after that moment was a needless death. He says, quote, and the war will end with those same terms that would have been on offer, maybe even better terms than would have been on offer, when the Taliban had first been knocked out of power. And that's the ultimate tragedy of this, he says, is that everyone who died in the interim, both Americans and Afghanis, their blood is very specifically on our hands. He really believes, Sam, that that was needless death.
And I agree with him on a factual point of view that it was needful or needless deaths. I agree with that. We should have never been in the first place. And even so, when we changed tactical realities, it got much worse in terms of the inability to justify ourselves. We shouldn't have been there in the first place. However, I would push back a little bit on the everybody's got blood on their hands, because I think Sam Bushman, Lowell Nelson, Kirk Crosby, and a few others have done everything we can to not enter into these wars, to educate people to prevent these wars, to turn to God and ask for forgiveness for these wars, and to pray and to work towards us being not a warlike people. So I'm not sure everybody has blood on their hands, because there's only so much we can do, and there's only so much we're responsible for. But your point as a nation is certainly justified. We'll talk about it with Lowell in seconds.
Hey, listen up. This is a deep state alert. Former Texas Congressman Steve Stockman, who moved to arrest Lois Lerner for contempt of Congress, has been imprisoned by the very office that Lerner led. You heard right. Stockman hit the Obama administration hard, and they hit back with the full force of the federal government. The guy who said he wanted Mark Levin as Speaker of the House was the first to threaten Obama's impeachment, exposed Hillary selling steel to the Iranians, and blocked both Obama's immigration and gun bills from even reaching the House. But Obama holdovers came after him in federal court with trumped up charges and have locked our guy up. Like many others, he was on Obama's hit list. Steve fought for us in Congress, now we need to fight for him. Don't abandon this wounded hero on the battlefield. Let's help cover his massive legal costs. To chip in $5 or more, text the word FIGHT to 444-999. That's FIGHT, F-I-G-H-T, to 444-999, or go to defendapatriot.com. That's defendapatriot.com.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, by having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids.
With news the networks refuse to use, you are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
So let us go down in history as the ones doing our very best to reject the warlike people mentality and for us to push for peace. Let us be the ones to do that. And we're not naive. We know we've got to defend America. We know that when evil rises, good men must stand up. We understand that. And we understand defending our families and our religion and these things. We get that. But there's a very different reality of defending our religious freedoms and our families, our wives and our children. There's a very big difference in that viewpoint. I don't like war, but I must at times. protect and defend. I get that. That's a different mentality than we're talking about. The warlike people, we're going to go to war at the drop of a hat. We're going to nation build. We're going to meddle in the affairs of foreign nations, and we're going to become the big bully on the block. Kind of a mentality is what America has become, partly because of the military-industrial complex, partly because we've become a people that have turned against God as a nation. Sadly, all that's true. Nevertheless, there are those of us who are doing everything within our power to turn us in the proper direction towards God and towards peace, lol. And I think, generally speaking, his point's well taken.
I agree, Sam. Obviously, there are there's a large anti-war voice in among the citizens, among the public. Not large enough yet. I think we still need to grow that. But I just think it's kind of a unique event. You know, when a member of the military goes over there with one idea and then comes back with a more mature understanding of what the war is all about. I mean, typically, you know, a major, someone that rises that high in rank is pretty much bought into the system, and, you know, they believe in the surge. And here's a man who instead comes back and writes a book about the myth of the surge. And I just think that's notable. It's pretty rare, I think, for a military man to spend that long of a career in the military, serving the military-industrial complex, and then come out with a book and a sentiment that's totally against it, and explains why the surge is a myth, explains why we should not have been involved in Iraq and Afghanistan, and why we shouldn't be killing our brothers and sisters around the world, Sam.
Now, Rand Paul is another one who's done his best to avoid war, to reject the military-industrial complex or the warlike people mentality. In fact, the U.S. Senate disallows debate. Rand Paul wanted to discuss this and back away from some of this war. What, they wouldn't let him?
That's right, Sam. He made a motion in the U.S. Senate to open debate on a pair of resolutions. One was a resolution it was a resolution to block an arms sale to Qatar. The other resolution was to block arms sales to Bahrain. Now, Qatar and Bahrain are two of the countries over there in the Middle East who have allied with Saudi Arabia and are bombing Yemen, among other things. We don't know all that they do with the arms, but we do know that many of the arms that we sell these countries, whether it's Saudi Arabia or Bahrain or Qatar, those arms end up in the hands of terrorists who we are fighting. Our U.S. military is over there fighting various, you know, factions, ISIS, al-Nusra, and so forth. And the weapons that those groups have, al-Qaeda, get into their hands through nations like Qatar and Bahrain and Saudi Arabia. And so Rand just wanted to talk about this. He says we need to have a debate on this. He says it's senseless for us to sell weapons to these countries who turn around and arm our opposition, the very groups that our U.S. military members are fighting. He says this is insane. I listened to his 20-minute speech in support of his motion, Sam, and it's a keeper. I mean, he talks about this over and over, how insane it is to do what we're doing. And what does the U.S. Senate do? Well, they voted 42-57 to allow debate. In other words, they chose not to debate these two resolutions that would have blocked arms sales to Qatar and Bahrain.
Now, here's the interesting thing. I believe the reason they rejected the debate is because they know if we have it, the people will rally up. We'll get wind of it through talk radio and through Campaign for Liberty and every other conservative constitutional means, and we will push back, and eventually the people will rally and put a stop to our aggressive involvement in these armings and war and et cetera, et cetera. They know full well that if it comes to the attention of the American people and to a discussion point, that it very well could be shut down. And so when the Senate tried to override Donald Trump and say, hey, let's get out of some of these wars, it just shows how disingenuous they really are. When it's public, they want to do what they know the people want, which is get out of wars. Let's not nation build. Let's not fund the military-industrial complex. Let's not be a warlike people. The people want peace. And when the people get wind of it, our masses, our greater number, creates reason to the discussion. They don't want that. Therefore, they shut down the debate intentionally because they want to back, again, the military-industrial complex or the lobbyists that fund and feed them, if you will. They don't want this debate because if they really get an honest, open debate about this, the people will vote against war. They know it, and therefore they're going to prevent it. Lol.
Exactly right, Sam. 42 to 57, when you think about that, they did vote along partisan lines pretty much. You know, Mike Lee and Rand Paul, I think were the only, well, Ted Cruz on the first vote also voted for the debate. You know, Mitt Romney and Democrats voted against it. But the bottom line is what you say is right. They both parties, both the Republicans and the Democrats, they want war because their campaign coffers are filled by the military-industrial complex. And anybody like Rand Paul, like Mike Lee, who stands up and opposes the military-industrial complex and votes to have a discussion about this kind of legislation, of course, they don't get campaign donations and campaign contributions and support, you know, from the military-industrial complex, these companies that do so well financially because of war. And that's the price they pay. But, you know, I'm glad that they're back there, you know, paying that price. And we need to noise this abroad. We need to tell more people about what they're really up to. And I'm glad you pointed out the fact that when they had a chance to stop the sale of arms to Saudi Arabia, they didn't take it. When they had a chance to override Trump's veto, they couldn't muster the vote. And so our U.S. Senate and House both are very warlike institutions. They're a reflection of the people. They're a reflection of the majority of the people in this country who think that we can go in there and just, you know, knock somebody over and then life will be good.
But I submit they're only really a reflection of the military-industrial complex that have kind of held the people hostage. Most people don't understand the truth about war and peace and what our actions are cause or have consequences. They don't understand the blowback principle taught by Ron Paul and documented and highlighted by the CIA. Most Americans have been on a steady diet of war propaganda for their whole lives, Lowell. And so I get that you're right about that. I also get that most people, when they really get the real fact, get the real truth, in other words, if there's a real media that will really call a halt to the con game and tell the tale of liberty as it really is and paint the landscape as it ought to be without a manipulative, warlike agenda, when people get the who, what, when, where, why, when people get the back-end understanding of exactly what our actions are causing and doing and et cetera, then, you know what, the people choose right. But they've been on a steady diet via the mainstream press in bed with the military-industrial complex backed by congressmen and senators that, by golly, the boogeyman's out there. By golly, you got to stop terrorism. Better to fight the war over there than let them come over here. But they don't really document the reality that oftentimes when you have to chase somebody into their own lands, you're off the mark in terms of your defense. What are you defending? You become the aggressor. You breach sovereignty. And when you start arming and training and funding this kind of war mentality around the world, we're in over 130 plus nations militarily speaking. Most Americans don't even realize. They just think there's maybe one or two or three necessary hotspots around the world that, by golly, thank heavens for the military. No, I do agree. Thank you for the military and thanks for the defense of the greatest country on the face of the earth. I understand it. But I also understand that it's this deception and this steady diet of manipulation that gets Americans to be backing and promoting these causes to which they really have no knowledge of and no real understanding of how it fits into the matrix of reality and honesty and war instead of peace mentality. And I think if most people get the truth, they start to wake up and change their tune. This warrior that you speak of in this first column, All Americans Have Blood on Their Hands, highlights the point. He thought he was going for the great cause. He was ready to go. 18 years, throw down, get it done for America, buddy. I'm a patriot, I believe. And then he kind of got a rude awakening going, wait a minute, hold on now. What are we doing? Why are we doing this? Why are we here? What is the outcome of our actions? And you know what? He woke up, and I believe that's where most Americans sit as well. We'll talk about that, and then we'll double down and say not only is it sad that the U.S. Senate won't debate this so the truth can come out, but they're also, we've got war crimes that aren't even being punished. How are we going to have accountability and change the game when that happens? Quick pause. Sam Curtin Lowell, CampaignForLiberty.org on Liberty Roundtable Live.
Yeah.
your daily Liberty Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
The Trump administration insisting that Iran was behind the attacks this past Thursday on a pair of oil tankers in the Gulf of Oman. U.S. Republican Senator Tom Cotton says it should be answered with a military strike on Iran.
We can make a military response in a time and in a manner of our choosing, but yes, unprovoked attacks on commercial shipping warrant a retaliatory military strike against the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Cotton speaking on CBS's Face the Nation. Meanwhile, some Iranian lawmakers are blaming the U.S. for the attacks. The Speaker of Iran's parliament saying the attacks on the tankers, quote, seem to complement the economic sanctions against Iran. Proceedings to get started today in San Diego in a war crimes court-martial of Navy SEAL Eddie Gallagher, who is accused of killing a teenage ISIS fighter as well as two civilians. And this is USA Radio News.
At Walgreens, we know that your day doesn't stop for diabetes. So when you've got places to go and people to see, count on Walgreens every day to get expert diabetes advice 24/7. Find all major brands of testing supplies like Walgreens True Metrics in-store and online. And download tools to help you stay on track, like our 5-star mobile app with Pill Reminder. At Walgreens, we are your diabetes go-to. Stop by and talk to your pharmacist today. Walgreens, trusted since 1901.
At Indeed, we believe a resume is a great way to see an overview of a candidate. But you're not hiring a resume, you're hiring a person. That's why Indeed offers tools that help bridge the gap between a candidate and the resume. Like skill tests, which let you actually see a candidate's abilities in action to make sure they're a good fit for the job. See beyond the resume with Indeed. Experience Indeed for yourself today and get a free sponsored job upgrade on your first posting at Indeed.com/promo. Terms and conditions apply.
Chaos at a graduation party in Philadelphia last night after a gunman opens fire, killing one person and wounding at least seven others. No arrests have been made, and the police commissioner says they're not sure of the motive.
There was nothing that suggested there was a fight that preceded this, at least according to the people here.
Facing nationwide outrage over a video showing the arrest of a black mother and father, the mayor of Phoenix is now apologizing. Mayor Kate Gallego took to Twitter over the weekend to call the actions of two Phoenix police officers completely inappropriate and clearly unprofessional. The cell phone video taken by a witness showing the officers not wearing body cams, pointing guns and yelling threats at the man and his pregnant fiancée who were with their two young daughters, one of whom the family admits had taken a doll from a dollar store. Workers at Volkswagen's only U.S. plant in Chattanooga, Tennessee, have voted not to join a union. And this is USA Radio News.
All right, we're talking about war. We're talking about Rand Paul tried to create a debate relating to the funding of some of these nations in the Middle East. Oftentimes, we pretend we know the good guy. We pretend we have friends in these wars. But you know what? What you end up is a disallowing of a debate, blocking arms sales to Qatar and Bahrain and Saudi Arabia, etc. They shut that debate down. We're in over 130-plus nations, militarily speaking. And the war crimes that don't get punished are a key part of this as well. Anyway, I don't mean to get the American people off the hook, and I don't mean to push too hard on this point. We have obligations and responsibility, no doubt, but it's very hard for me to hold the American people too responsible when I see, you know what, for probably the first 30 years of my life or 25 years of my life, I didn't even realize that we were in 130-plus nations, militarily speaking. I didn't realize how much money we put overseas to rebuilding of nations, and I didn't understand the CIA blowback principle, et cetera, et cetera. I'm accountable for what I understand, Lowell, and that's kind of why I a little bit defend the American people here.
And with good reason, Sam. I was on the same spectrum of understanding as you were 30 years ago, 40, I don't know how long ago. I thought we were doing the right thing over there as well, whether it was in, you know, Vietnam or, you know, Korea or, you know, Cambodia, Laos, you know, maybe the Middle East. I mean, I think over the years I've come to understand that these wars are not what we're told they are, You know, certainly the media is in bed with the military industrial complex on these things, and we're told one thing, but reality is different. And that's why I think it's worth our time to talk about these things, to bring them to light, to help more and more people understand that the war is a racket. It is a device of the military industrial complex. It's also being used by the United States to support the petrodollar, as we discussed on February 25th. And it's a great show that we spent the whole time, the whole hour that day. If you haven't heard that hour, then go back to the archives at Liberty Roundtable and re-listen to that show. But the petrodollar is one of the reasons that we bring the heat on countries that we take out, such as Iraq in 2001, 2002, such as Libya, where we took out Muammar Gaddafi. That's why we're putting pressure on Venezuela and pressure on Iran, because these are countries which have jettisoned the dollar as a means by which they sell their oil to other countries around the world. And once the United States loses the support for the petrodollar, meaning if all the countries quit selling oil in dollars, that would then the value of the dollar would crumble. And of course, the United States doesn't want that to happen, because it's a scam right now that's working so well for the United States.
But if we had constitutional currency, gold and silver, as the founding fathers set up, then we wouldn't be in jeopardy at all around the world. We could sustain ourselves internally. We could reach out to the world in kindness and love and leadership and example. We could be a light on a hill. We could lead by asset-based honest money. We could teach other nations to do the same and turn to God and turn to honesty and morality. And just think of what a world it could be like, Lowell.
It would be a truly awesome world, Sam. And just at the bottom of the hour news, I noticed that they were talking about the Gallagher prosecution, which is something that I wanted to talk about, as well as they're talking about this. I can't believe these guys, the mainstream media, still talking about this incident with the two oil tankers in the Gulf of Oman as being, you know, they're saying that Iran did that, and Iran did not do that. I mean, it's probably done by Israel, if you want to point the finger anywhere. It doesn't make any sense at all for Iran to be, you know, shooting at the tankers like that. It's a false flag operation, Sam, and the governments of the world...
It is, but I would even ask a broader question, though. False flag or not, who did it or not, set all those things aside, because that's what they want you distracted with, to debate who did it, to debate whether it's justified or whether it's necessary. Why are we over there? Why does it matter to us? Why are we so dependent on it? And why are we tying our dollar to it? And then why are we playing in the middle of every nation to decide friend or foe and use our, quote, big brother or whatever you want to call it, or... To do, why are we there doing all that?
Well, that's the question we should be asking. But that's the you know, like you said, the question the mainstream media does not want us to ask, because then the story of the petrodollar would become so well known, and the scam would be over. You know, and then the dollar would crumble, and we would find ourselves with a broken economy. We need to go through that pain, by the way, in order to. I just don't see a way forward to honest money without going through some of the pain that is required, you know, because somehow the dollar will crumble. It's just a matter of time. And what are we going to be doing then, right? I mean, hopefully we won't be supporting the war anymore. We won't have the money, won't have the strength to do so. The U.S. empire would be over. And then it becomes a matter of defending ourselves against some of the other countries of the world that want to take out this bully. This U.S. bully here. So it's not going to be pretty, Sam, and I don't look forward to it. But on the other hand, I do look forward to it, because I don't want to keep scamming the people of the world with the petrodollar. It's just not honest, and we're hurting our brothers and sisters around the world with war, with by killing them and displacing them because of the U.S. interventionist foreign policy around the world, and so. That's the reason that I like to talk about this, Sam. It's just sad that we have to talk about it, but we have to wake up our fellow citizens, and that's what Ron Paul has been attempting to do, and he's the author of this column right here at campaignforliberty.org that he posted just last week. He says that Representative Duncan Hunter, a Republican from California, found himself in hot water recently over comments he made in defense of Navy SEAL Edward Gallagher, who faces war crimes war crime charges over his alleged conduct while serving in combat overseas. This is the story at the bottom of the hour, folks, where they're talking about prosecuting Gallagher for killing a 15-year-old member of ISIS while in custody, taking photos of him posing with a corpse and so forth. Well, oddly enough, Sam, Representative Hunter defends Gallagher. And he, how does he defend Gallagher? Well, he does it by suggesting that he has done worse things in battle than Gallagher did. I don't understand.
Yeah, that ought to fly as logic, shouldn't it, Lowell? And that's just the most insane thing I've ever heard. But again, this is where, no offense, but Duncan Hunter is a warlike person. He's been involved in the warlike mentality. He's been immersed in that, in military-industrial complex, and the deceptive reality there for literally his whole life. So I'm not defending his position, but I see why people are so deceived on this.
That's right. By his own account, Sam, Hunter and his fellow soldiers killed hundreds of innocent children, civilians, including women and children. They fired mortars into the city, and they killed at random. That's a quote. You know, that's what Hunter, by his own account, his own admission, in the Battle of Fallujah in early 2007, that's what Hunter and his comrades in arms did there in Iraq. And so I don't understand his logic here. You know, I guess I do, but on the other hand, I don't. He defends the Navy SEAL, who's charged with a war crime, by stating that his own actions in battle were worse. It's brazen, Sam. I find that so incredible that that's how he would stand up and talk in defense of this Navy SEAL. Now, you know, if we truly were defending our own homeland from attack, and we, you know, if the conflict was justified, then yeah, I might understand, you know, actions like this. But boy, I just don't understand the aggressive this stance, this politically aggressive stance. In defense of a Navy SEAL charged with a war crime by pointing out that his own actions were worse. It boggles my mind, Sam.
Well, if you accept this premise that we're just defending, God, family, and country, and apple pie, and the American ideal, and you know, things around the world, if you buy that premise, then it's easy to say, you know what, that's just the necessity of war. I'm sorry, but these people are evil. You got to... And people just fall into this lie because they've been sold this bill of goods their whole life. It's hard for them to understand what they think is, hey, this is the face of evil that we're stopping. You know what? It's kind of like the police officers. On one hand, I defend them because they're in harm's way, because they do take on the tough things. But where's the line? When do you say, you know what? You're not justified in this anymore. Your cause is just, but your application is unjust. And that's kind of where I think we fall. And really, when we don't punish these, in my opinion, war criminals, then that's when we kind of start to cross that line, because we start to justify that which is, in my view, not justifiable. Lol.
Right. And that brings us to the meatiest question in this column, this Ron Paul column. He says, Representative Duncan Hunter and his fellow soldiers may have killed hundreds of innocent civilians and even felt justified. Their superior officers, after all, established the rules of engagement. Above those superior officers, going up and beyond to the policymakers, the lie was sold to the American people to justify a war of choice against a country that could not have threatened us if it wanted to. And so,
it's all about what the reasons to go to war are, and what's justifiable, and what's honest and true and accurate and not. And people get crossways on that all the time. Let's talk a little bit more about the Espionage Act. Liberty Roundtable Live, Sam Curtin, Lowell on your radio.
Have we realized the assault against our lives, our liberties, our faith? To defeat this assault, Christians and all people of goodwill should have strategies to prevail in our faith and principles, which are simple. No need for a complex formula. One goal, one aim. A strategy like the heroic Christians of the past. We win, they lose. Nothing less. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm, by a friend of Medjugorje. The strategy of heaven revealed. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm, available on Amazon.com or by calling Caritas in the U.S. at 205-672-2000.
Between the parades, picnics, and fireworks from coast to coast, most of us are experts on how to celebrate Independence Day. This year, we invite you to join us at Liberty Hall in Far West Utah for a grand old 4th of July celebration that focuses on why we celebrate. From noon to 2 p.m., come and hear patriotic music by Radiant Productions. We'll be showing a screening of A More Perfect Union. Enjoy free hot dogs and popcorn. And hear Benjamin Franklin speak on the Declaration of Independence. Make it an Independence Day to remember Thursday, July 4th from noon to 2 p.m. at Liberty Hall, 3677 North, Highway 126 in Far West Utah. Sponsored by Loving Liberty. All proceeds benefit Follow the Flag.
All right, really quick before we get to the Espionage Act, Kirk Crosby just sent me an incredible article by Joseph Farah. And it's Joseph Farah, as you know, is the owner or creator of WND.com, WorldNet Daily, if you will. We talk about war crimes that don't get punished. When we talk about the Espionage Act and some of these things, I think this article right here is critical to understand because it gives you another line of experience and study and education on this topic, and it kind of highlights why they might shut down or disallow a debate that Rand Paul wants to have regarding these issues. Kurt?
That's right. The headline reads, U.S. taxpayers still paying for Vietnam battles. $400 million tab in recent years. Job may be decades from finish, they say. Subheadline, 40 years later, taxpayers still on the hook for the U.S. role in the Vietnam War. With Congress doling out more than $400 million in the last 2.5 decades, that's what Joseph Farah's G2 Bulletin reports, maybe more decades yet before the funding stops, according to the Congressional Research Service. They say the problem is all the unexploded ordnance that remains in Southeast Asia. Now, especially if you wonder what that means, it means... Well, they got those landmines that didn't get blown up, I guess, and so we got to pay for them. And of course, that's the way the other countries do. If they put a bomb out, they have to pay for it as well, right, Lowell?
Yeah, right. Right. It's interesting you mentioned that, Kurt. One of the biggest tourist attractions in Cambodia in the 1990s was people could go over there, and they had so many weapons and munitions left over that you could go over there and just like for 20 or 30 bucks, you could fire a rocket launcher or fire a grenade launcher and at an old Jeep or Humvee or something sitting out there in the field because they had so many of these armaments left over that civilians would go over there and just, pay a mere pittance for the opportunity to fire a big time, military weapon.
Well, that brings up a great idea, Lowell. I mean, you could call it military tourism. And, for example, guys that really like war games or video games, they could go do it and run through real landmine areas and see, hey, which ones really go off, I mean, it'd be the ultimate war game, right? Almost real kind of thing.
Yeah, and it's interesting to me that 40 years later, ladies and gentlemen, taxpayers are still paying for the Vietnam battles. Joseph Farah's G2 Bulletin highlights it. And what's interesting to me is they say Congress doling out more than $400 million in the last 2.5 decades. And they say this is going to be forever. What, decades before it even stops, Kurt?
Well, that's what it looks like, and I mean, no good or bad program ever really stops. It just seems to maybe change the name, Sam, and, dump more money into it, right?
Unfortunately, that's exactly right, and I think this highlights the point that Lowell's making, that, you know what, we need war crimes that are punished. You know, if we're going to have war crimes, let's punish folks for them. But the U.S. Senate disallows debate because they don't want to talk about Joseph Farah, highlighting that, look, we're still paying out thousands and thousands of dollars 40 years later, and we're not even close to done. See, if the American people understand that, Lowell, they're not going to go for it.
You're right about that, Sam. And my only hope is that the American people will wake up and will actually listen to these kinds of programs, come up to speed on the fact that the military-industrial complex, what they're doing to us, the lies that they're spinning for us, and then and enough of us will say no, we will change the fabric of our Congress. I mean, if enough people get upset about this, then we can change the people who sit in those seats of power and change them to people who are anti-war. It's very simple. I mean, the simple solution is not simple to execute on it. It takes a lot of work, but you and Kurt and others in alternative media are doing a wonderful job in exposing and spreading the truth, exposing the lies, and that's why I'm so proud to be on your show from week to week, because you guys are doing such a great job of spreading the word. And
well, we all got to participate the best we can, and I think it's the great awakening of the American people that we're hoping for and praying for and working towards and doing our best to bring about, because it is about, in my opinion, God, family, and country. And you know what? We're not justified before God for most of these conflicts. Now, I don't want to bring it down to the level that I'm judging individuals and their hearts and things, because I don't know. That's my Savior Jesus Christ's realm. But I will say this. I want war crimes punished. And I will say this. I don't want to be a U.S. taxpayer paying for a Vietnam War. In fact, it's debatable that we should have ever been there. But literally decades, decades, decades later, 40 years, four decades plus, and now we're going, hey, we're still paying for these Vietnam battles. No one knows about it. And not only that, it's decades in the future before it's going to even stop. And it takes Joseph Farah's G2 Bulletin, WND.com, to bring us up to education on this. Let's talk about the Espionage Act, and we need to repeal that sucker yesterday, because, again, it sounds good. It's like the Patriot Act or something, but the truth is it's being manipulated against us, Lowell.
Well, I didn't know the origins of the Espionage Act, but, Sam, it originated 2 months after World War I began. I had no idea that it's such an old act, but it is. Jacob G. Hornberger, who's a columnist that I read him every article I get. I mean, I like him more and more all the time. The more I read him, the more I like him. He posted this article at LouRockwell.com, but he starts it out saying, World War I is the gift that just keeps on giving. And although the U.S. government's intervention into this senseless, immoral, and destructive war occurred 100 years ago, the adverse effects of the war continue to besiege our nation. Among the most notable examples is the Espionage Act, a tyrannical law that was enacted 2 months after the U.S. entered the war, and which, unfortunately, remained on the books after the war came to an end. In fact, it is that World War I relic that U.S. officials are now relying on to secure the criminal indictment of Julian Assange, the WikiLeaks head who released a mountain of evidence disclosing the inner workings and grave wrongdoings on the part of the U.S. national security establishment, especially with respect to the manner in which it has waged its undeclared forever wars in the Middle East and Afghanistan. Boom.
And I look at it and say, we're still discovering things. We've been at this study for 30-plus years, all three of us. And all I'm telling you is we know these things, but, man, we still discover new things every day. That's why I don't hold the American people 100% accountable or whatever, or point the finger directly. Look, this is a long... hidden reality and a very difficult understanding. It you learn line upon line. You don't just wake up overnight and have it all solved. And we need to really participate in the American people waking up on this. But that Espionage Act, 100 years in place, that might get brought up in a debate with Rand Paul and others. See? They don't want to talk about it. It might get brought up that, hey, this was a war that we ought to not have been in the first place. Same with Vietnam. And, hey, we're still paying and suffering from these wars. And, you know, the American people see the truth on this, and I'm telling you, they will reject it. And the Espionage Act is a great example.
You're right, Sam. You know, back in World War I, Wilson, who was president back then, Woodrow Wilson, basically conscripted the American men to fight in World War I. he enslaved them, basically, right? I mean, when a government has to force its citizens to fight a particular war, that's a good sign that it's a bad one, right? One that we shouldn't be involved in. But that's how we got the Espionage Act. The government didn't want to be criticized for its entry into World War One, right? Woodrow Wilson promised that we wouldn't be involved in the war, the war going on in Europe, right? He promised. And then he did everything he could to involve us in that war after he got elected. It's bait and switch, and he was paid to do it by the billionaires who are going to benefit from the military industrial complex. It was just in its infancy then. But that's what happened. And he says, and so Hornberger says, make no mistake about it. U.S. officials went after such people with a vengeance, doing their best to punish Americans for doing nothing more than speaking. He's talking about those who criticized the draft, this World War One draft, those who criticized the draft for attempting to persuade American men to resist it, they were prosecuted. One example, he says, was Charles Schenck, who was prosecuted and convicting of violating the Espionage Act after circulating a flyer that opposed the draft. I'm thinking to myself, how many letters have I written opposing, you know, the military industrial complex?
And, you know, was right, and so are you, sir.
When's the other foot going to drop? When am I going to be prosecuted under the Espionage Act? Another example he gives here in this column was Eugene Debs, who got convicted for criticizing the war and for encouraging men to resist the draft. Well, President Wilson called Debs a traitor to his country for doing that, Sam. And so here, Hornberger...
I would submit Wilson's a traitor to his country.
Yeah. Hornberger ends his column by talking about the White Rose, a group of college students in Germany who, in the midst of World War II, began distributing pamphlets calling on Germans to resist their own government to oppose the troops, you know, with the Hitler, when the Third Reich was rising. You know, we've talked about the White Rose on this program, and I think it's very much worth our time, you know, maybe to pick it up again sometime. But if you haven't heard of the White Rose, folks, then look it up on Wikipedia and then get Sophie Scholl's movie, the movie about Sophie Scholl, who is the young lady at the center, the heart of the White Rose movement in Germany in the 1930s. It's a chilling expose of what happened. And by the way, Sam, today, any U.S. official, you know, they would praise the actions of the White Rose, but that's because it's history, it happened in a different country. The fact is that if White Rose members had done the very same thing in this country, then U.S. officials would have gone after them with the same anger, the same vengeance, as German officials did the White Rose people in Germany. And
they might have had to stick the IRS on them for starters. And if that didn't work, we'll just go to the next level, right?
That's exactly right, Sam.
All right, U.S. taxpayers still paying for Vietnam battles. We're still suffering under a lot of this. Joseph Farah, G2 column on WND.com. Any quick other tidbit on that, Kurt, to mention?
Well, you know, one thing you can know is, I guess, on the 2019 appropriations program, we spent $200 million for these demining activities, and they call it the Legacies of War Recognition and Unexploded Ordnance Removal Act. It allows $50 million per year for humanitarian assistance. That doesn't seem too humanitarian to taxpayers to me.
Yeah, there you have it. All right, it's critical, and we wanted to give you more information to back up our claims and to give you reference material for study and a whole lot more, so there it is. Speaking of reference materials and greater opportunity to study and learn and grow, and, well, leadership school's coming up. Lowell, quickly promote that and let people know where to go and get involved.
Thank you. Sandy, Utah is the place. July 27th is the day. That's Saturday, 9 to 5, an all-day school on political leadership, how you can persuade your public servants to do what you want them to do, which is, in our opinion, to help them understand the proper role of government and then to adhere to the Constitution for the United States, Sam.
Thanks so much, Lowell. This is a critical area, ladies and gentlemen, in which we need to stand up and be counted, and we need to really work towards educating our brothers and sisters on the truth. Thank you, sir. Godspeed.
You're welcome. Take care.
Lowell Nelson, campaignforliberty.org, doing a phenomenal job. Campaignforliberty.org/Utah to learn about their upcoming seminar June 27th. We declare this nation shall endure.